Welcome to A Closer Look. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Dennis, for nearly seven decades, the international organization CARE has had one core task, and that's simply to help others. Now, CARE undertakes various humanitarian aid projects, but for the oldest and largest aid organization, fighting global poverty has been its number one mission.
Now, CARE works in 90 countries around the world, and its programs reach more than 72 million people. For the last 9 years, Dr. Helene Gayle has led the organization as its president and CEO. In just a few months, though, she will leave her post and join the McKinsey Social Initiative as its first CEO. Dr. Helene Gayle joins us now. Dr. Gayle, thanks for taking the time. Good to have you.
My pleasure.
You said that making this decision was not easy after 9 years. So why, especially after helping move the organization's focus in the direction of empowering women, particularly in countries at risk, why leave now?
Well, as you said, it wasn't an easy decision. But, you know, I really have always felt that change in leadership is good not only for organizations, but also for individuals. And I had kind of said in the offset that when I started at CARE that 5 years is about a minimum that anybody needs to be able to actually accomplish something with a complex organization like CARE. But around 10 years, you start thinking that your old ideas are new and probably don't have as much to continue to contribute. So, you know, I just felt like it was around time. It was the end of the strategy period that I had helped to launch. And, you know, I think also, you know, I had been with the organization through some really rough times during the financial downturn, and we had a lot of challenges. And so, you know, was able to put the organization back on, I think, really solid footing, you know, chart a new course around this focus on girls and women and other things. And so I just felt like it was a good time leaving, you know, more or less on a high and hoping to pass the baton on to another person who can take the organization and keep it moving forward.
When you arrived at CARE, did you set some specific goals and projects that you wanted to see implemented, and have they been met?
Well, you know, when I came on, I had some general notion of things that I thought would be important for the organization. I wanted to be there long enough to validate those and make sure that I was taking the organization, first of all, get to know the organization well enough to see if my ideas and where the organization was actually fit. And, you know, I'm pleased to say that a lot of the things that I thought would be important for moving the organization have in fact been very useful. So, for instance, the focus on girls and women, which is really an evolution. The organization had stepped back and looked at where they thought they could have the greatest impact, what the programs on the ground were saying, and it was very clear that if you can invest in girls and women, you really have a huge opportunity for creating long-lasting change. So that was one area. Another was how in this day and age, can the not-for-profit arena really do more in partnership with others, particularly organizations that bring different types of strengths? So, for instance, our work with the private sector, we've done a lot more to bring public sector, private sector, and the not-for-profit world together in a way that I think combines the different talents that you see in those different sectors. Another area was advocacy. How can we use our voice, not just our programs, to really be able to amplify what we do beyond the direct impact that we have in reaching people's lives, but taking that experience in a way that helps to shift policies? Because if you can change policies, you actually can have sometimes an even greater impact than just the individuals that you reach alone. And then I think another area that you know, we were able to move forward was this intersection between the environment and our work in poverty. So people and planet, how do those come together? Many of the populations that we work with are the ones who are facing the greatest impact of climate change, environmental degradation, and if we can look at how to make sure that people are able to get to earn and have a good livelihood, but do that in a way that can that preserves the environment, then you really have a mutually beneficial impact. So that link between planet and people was something that we also were able to move forward over the last decade.
And all those initiatives, plus the other various programs that CARE is involved in, it takes money. And you mentioned the recession. So how was CARE able to sort of weather that storm? And then follow up with, how would you grade the fiscal health of the organization now as opposed to then?
Well, I think we weathered the storm because people believe in our mission, believe in what we do, and I think we deliver impact. And so even during those tough times, we had an incredibly loyal donor base that continued to support CARE and CARE's work. I think we upped our game in terms of looking at how we create value for the resources that we have. And so we were able to do that. We also, like many organizations, had to look at cutting costs at the same time. And we went through some painful times where we had to cut back on the number of staff and some of our functions. So, you know, those times are difficult. But I think we've come out of it a much stronger organization and, you know, feel like we're on really solid footing as an organization overall.
You talked about shifting the focus to women and girls, as we said at the outset, and then the goal is to affect policy. Are there areas where you can say, look, because of our efforts, we've affected this or that, either government action, nonprofit action, humanitarian action?
Well, I think one of the areas that we have had a huge impact is on the whole area of food aid and contributing to food aid reform. I don't want to get too technical here, but you know, there was a policy called monetization where that started back when we had huge surpluses, where we would pay farmers to buy their crops and then ship those over to poor countries.
When you say we had surpluses, you mean the U.S.?
The U.S. Okay. The United States had surpluses, buying crops from U.S. farmers, shipping them on U.S. carriers, and then getting those to poor countries, where we then turned those food commodities in and basically exchanged those for money, and then those monies went to fund development programs. Well, there's, you know, that might have made sense at a time when there were huge surpluses and where taxpayers wanted to see that we were doing something for Americans in the process of helping people overseas. But this was an incredibly inefficient way to get either resources or food to people in the countries in which we worked. And so, you know, just the cost of shipping as well as the time that it took in the transaction of converting food into money, and then the fact that we were actually flooding local markets with U.S. crops in the very countries where agriculture is the economic engine for those countries. So for a lot of reasons, we felt it was not in keeping with our mission of helping to grow thriving economies in the places that we worked. So we were the only organization that took the stand of opting out of this monetization policy. And in the process, we forfeited anywhere in the neighborhood of $50 to $100 million a year. So that was on top of the hit we were taking during the economic crisis. But we did that because we felt it was important to demonstrate that we stood behind our beliefs.
So what's
and
been
as
the
a result
payoff,
of
then?
That, you know, we have been able to move forward the food aid debate over the last 5 or so years to the place where monetization is now almost totally phased out of U.S. policies and much more focus on purchasing food commodities locally and regionally so that we're helping to stimulate agriculture in the countries that we work in, and we're not continuing this process that depresses people's economic viability in the countries that we work in. So, you know, that was a great policy coup, a policy win, if you will, but it was one that had a huge organizational impact. But I think we felt good that we were standing behind our beliefs.
And there are countries, obviously, that CARE goes into that are dealing with war and conflict. How difficult is it to first, you know what the process is, you know what you want to do, but you also have to deal with policy and from the government of that country. How is that, take us through how that process works in terms of before you go into a country, before you say, look, these are our programs, you have to sort of meet with the government officials, and that can't be easy, I'm imagining.
Well, you know, as a non-governmental organization, we both work with the government in countries where that is possible and where having a partnership with the government is in the best interest of its citizens. And then there are some countries in which we don't work directly with governments because, in fact, it would be very difficult. And, in fact, sometimes the policies are not supportive of the best needs of their citizens. So we try to work with governments as much as possible because we want to support governments to be able to do what makes the best is in the best interest of its citizens. And at times that's very challenging. But I think we want to make sure that whatever we're doing is long-lasting and is not just short-term fixes. And in many cases, that does mean working with difficult governments, but in a way that kind of continues to move forward the best way to make sure that it's supporting its citizens.
Can you give me an example of a government that was a little bit challenging, but in the end, it all worked out?
Well, you know, it's difficult to give one particular government. I will just say that for most of the countries that we work in, we've been in for decades, and we've been able to work throughout in even difficult situations. During the years of the Taliban, for instance, when education of girls was considered illegal, because we worked so strongly with the communities there, we were actually able to continue educating girls because the communities themselves believed in the work that we were doing. And so, you know, I think for us, it is because we work directly with communities, because communities trust CARE, because communities believe that we are working in their best interest, and because we actually work with them to build solutions. That's how we're able to work in many countries, even during difficult times.
Let me pick an especially difficult one then, Syria. And you were in Amman, in Amman, Jordan, in 2013, and Rose paid a visit over there as well as refugees from Syria were coming into the country. To what extent does CARE or can CARE work with a government like that of Bashar al-Assad? And, you know, is it almost impossible, given the complex nature of that conflict, to help the people who need it most?
Yeah, Dennis, that's a good example of a very, very complicated situation. You know, we're working primarily in the countries surrounding Syria, Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon, and working with those populations who are refugeed from that situation. It is very difficult to work directly in Syria at this point, both because of particularly because of the safety risks and safety and security for our own workers, and because most of our staff come from the countries in which we work. You know, we don't want to put people in double jeopardy because of the assistance, and so we're constantly in that delicate balance of assuring staff safety at the same time as we're exercising our humanitarian mandate, which is to say that all people deserve the basics of life, particularly in situations of civil war and conflict.
Is it difficult in that situation especially to avoid being seen as taking sides, especially since it's very difficult sometimes to know who's fighting whom?
Well, we're a non-political organization. We don't take sides. And so our allegiance are to the people who need the support and need the help. And that's what our humanitarian mandate dictates to us, is that we don't take sides. We focus on making sure that we're getting food, water, shelter, medical care, and basic needs to people who are going through horrendous challenges in their lives, and making sure that we do all we can to keep them safe and make sure that their needs are met.
During the time in Amman, Jordan, where I followed you and the other CARE officials around, and by the way, I hope I wasn't in the way.
But, not at all. It was a pleasure.
But how often, you take a lot of trips like that. You came to Amman, Jordan, you said you wanted to firsthand talk to some of the refugees to find out what their needs were and find out what was working and what wasn't working. You take a lot of those trips to different areas?
Oh, yeah. You know, for me, it's what brings me my inspiration is going out and seeing the work that we do on the ground, even in tough situations like that. You know, you see hope and inspiration in the kind of resilience that that we see in the people that we work with. And so for me, it's important to get out there. I think I'm a better representative of CARE's work when I come back here to the United States to talk about CARE and our work. And I hope that I also can bring a message of support to people in the countries that we work in so that people know how much we care about making sure that they have the same types of opportunities to realize their potential, no matter where they may have been born on this earth.
And after a visit like that, is there sort of also sort of a meeting to say, well, look, here's what's working, here's what's not working, and then do you assess sort of what CARE is doing? And I'm imagining that also it takes a lot of people to make those recommendations and changes if you see fit.
Sure. Well, we do have a staff of almost 10,000 people who are responsible for the work on the ground. We have a management team that looks at those situations, and we're constantly asking ourselves the question of, are we making sure that we're having the greatest impact that we can in the places that we work, and constantly making sure that we're making mid-course corrections when those are necessary.
One final thought, perhaps, and Rose may have one too. As in a little while, we'll be talking to Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, and one of the subjects we'll pick up is the stalemate in the Senate over human trafficking legislation, which obviously affects women and girls. Does an organization like CARE take a position on the battle that's going on now in the Senate over whether money from the Special Victims Fund could be used to cover abortions for women who were raped? Or is that a difficult fight to stay out of?
Well, it's not an issue that we're particularly engaged in. I'll just say, you know, I know that our senator from Georgia is one who always weighs both sides carefully, thinks about what's in the best interest of the nation as well as the world. So, you know, we continue to be hopeful that people will not look at this in a partisan way, but really think about what's really in the best interest of girls and women around the world, what's in the best interest of our nation, what's in the best interest of our world, and not think of it as, you know, a partisan issue.
Would an American bill make any difference, though, do you think, when you look at the global stage and the extent of human trafficking and the complexity of it?
I think an American bill, an American voice in all of these issues always matters.
Two things before we wrap up. You just were awarded Black Girls Rock, which is a major award for the work that women of color are doing in this country. How was that experience? They just had the taping this weekend.
Pretty awesome.
You're among some heavy hitters.
Yeah, it was a pretty awesome crowd to be among. I was just really humbled to be accepting that award. And I just think that this award that gives young Black girls the sense of what they can achieve and what they can do, it's a real contribution. So I was really honored to be among those guests and be there with our First Lady, Michelle Obama, who is clearly a Black girl who rocks, and so many others who were there that evening. It was a pretty awesome experience.
You're hanging out with Jada Pinkett Smith and Ava DuVernay. Real quickly, Dr. Gail, you're going on to the
McKinsey. And Cecily Tyson.
Oh, yes. You're going on to the McKinsey Social Initiative. You're their first CEO. So again, you're sort of taking an organization. Your thoughts on taking this position, and what do you hope to, you want to set the same goals, or are you just going to kind of go into it and see what happens?
Well, I'm going to go into it and get my feet wet a little bit and figure out where, what thoughts and what where we may be able to take this. I just think it's an incredible opportunity. You know, McKinsey is a great organization that has been doing work in the social space for a long time. Now this idea of spinning off a not-for-profit that is not a consulting business, but really looks at how to put that brain trust to use to think about creating solutions to big global problems. There are lots of big global problems. You know, the first one that the initiative is focused on is around youth unemployment. This is a big issue for us around the world with a youth bulge that's coming. So, you know, I look forward to helping to create this new public-private partnership that is represented by MSI. And maybe I can come back here at a later date and,
sure,
and tell you about what's going on with that.
And on that note, any advice for the incoming president and CEO of CARE International?
Well, my only advice is to keep your passion. You know, I want somebody to who takes the helm of CARE who has as much passion about this work as I have. I think with that kind of passion, bringing different skills, different experiences. CARE is an incredible organization, and I hope that my successor has as least as wonderful an opportunity as I have had. I consider it an extreme privilege to have been at the helm of this incredible organization representing the 10,000 staff around the world who wake up every morning with the belief that it is possible to end extreme poverty in our lifetime and committed themselves to doing so. I will continue on that battle as well. It's been my real privilege to be there.
Dr. Helene Gale, President and CEO of Atlanta-based CARE International for a few months. Dr. Gale, as always, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks
my
so
pleasure.
Much.